education actually not only create knowledge about history, but create our perception of who our enemies, who are our friends, and why they did it to us, what we should do. So history education actually oriented more for future and for current events than for to the past.
It would seem that if we're using history education toward the promotion of peace, perhaps we haven't done such a good job of it in the past, considering what has been going on recently.
Yes, for many countries, history education is probably one of the most powerful mechanisms how to create national loyalties, perceptions of patriotism, and, of course, nationalism in this situation. And, of course, in this situation, it's important for government, especially in totalitarian regimes, post-conflict regimes, to present other groups as perpetrators, present them as aggressive, cruel, violent, to justify their own actions. So history education is really everything about justification of positivity of our nation and negative violent intentions of other nations. It's all about justification of current regime and current policy.
And that has been the way history education has been couched, that the winners of the wars get to write the history of what happened.
Yes, of course. The idea of truth is not even truthful, if I put it this way. The problem of history is that it's repeated every single time, but it's repeated not only for winners or against losers, but it's also rewritten to create particular ideology. It's rewritten to support particular groups, even within the nation, because we know that there are always majorities and minorities, always advantage and disadvantage groups.
We've seen stories even recently out of East Asia where the Philippines or Japan, South Korea have all asked to have their history books rewritten in such a way as to pretty much justify their position for the geopolitical situation going on in the South China Sea and claims to territory, claims against or for each other and that sort of thing. How do you really use history then in the classroom to get beyond that?
This is a very interesting topic because Germany actually really probably started the very effective way of reconciling differences, reconciling past autocracies. And there are a lot of very successful projects which Germany undertaken together with France, with Poland, with Israel and other countries. And actually, Germany even created the first reconciliation processes in history education. But if we compare it with what's going on, for example, in Japan, it's really important to justify their activities there, actually to support current policies toward islands. We know with Japan now in conflicts with Korea and with China regarding two islands. And for them, it's very important to show that during World War II, Japan had a right to pursue the activities, and they are not so violent. For example, Najin is not included, such issues as comfort women is not included, and there are no real efforts for reconciliation. And of course, it's used very effectively by Chinese government, South Korean government, to show that current claims for islands are in connection or real reflection of similar imperialistic policies of Japan during World War II.
For a country like North Korea, the use of ideology in history is so important, at least internally, and that, in a way, seems to have hampered efforts over more than 60 years to even come to some sort of a peace treaty with North Korea after the Korean War or the Korean conflict.
Oh, yeah, for North Korea, history education is probably one of the most powerful tools because they actually use every single effort to show that North Korean identity has real Koreanness, while the South Korea is completely submitted to the West, lost its ethnic identity, and only North Korea still holds it. Moreover, the idea of the leadership is so strongly incorporated into the very core of national identity in North Korea. For example, if you take history textbook, it's actually called Life and Achievements of Our Leader. It's not even history, it's about the life and activity of the leadership. And of course, in this situation, the all North Korean identity is organized around submission and paternalistic ideas about power.
So as education becomes more global and more students study abroad in different countries, how do they reconcile these different accounts of history?
This is a really interesting question because there are a lot of efforts. I just recently edited another book together with Simona Lasik, who is the director of Eckert Institute for International Textbook Research, on Common History Project. And there are a lot of efforts around the globe where different countries came together to create common history. And even in Asia, there are several textbooks, not, of course, for schools, but for universities, which were written by authors from China, Korea, and Japan together. There are also a lot of efforts in Europe. There are a lot of common history projects there. Even in the Middle East, there was a prize project, which published several books, represented narratives of both Jewish and Palestinian people. And they really helped to understand the comparative perspective. But of course, in many cases where people come to a new country and they see that history is completely different, it could be a shock. But it's very important that people really open this comparative view. They start understanding that there are no one narrative, the only one narrative. That's very important. As soon as they start understanding that there are different interpretations of the same events, they really start thinking about sources, why particular events interpreted in different way. And this is the only way for tolerant behavior. Because while if people have just only one narrative and they believe that it's the only truth, it's very hard to create any type of tolerance, any types of shared society, any type of peaceful perceptions of other groups.